Welcome back to the Beyond the OPS Baseball Podcast. As always, I am your host, Ethan. I definitely apologize for the lack of a consistent upload schedule. Work has been extremely busy. I just recently celebrated my birthday, and this school semester, frankly, kicked my ass. So I've been just kind of enjoying some time off. College football has been really good to watch. But if you're not already following me on X at OPS underscore baseball, I am extremely active, covering offseason content, posting threads. I actually just got a position as a writer and analyst with the Skipper's View, so that is very, very exciting. Shout out my team over there. Great group of guys. I'm so excited to share my work with them and interact with ideas. Some of the smartest young guys in the industry, so I'm really excited about that. I actually just posted my first article on Substack, so if you want to follow me over there and subscribe, that would be greatly appreciated. Just a fair warning, the flu rate in Fort Myers, Florida is up 3 times as it was last year, and unfortunately, I am in the percentage of people that got it again. So if I do sniffle or I have to pause to just talk for a little bit because I do have an upper respiratory infection, so it is hard to talk for multiple minutes. That is why, but I will definitely do my best for you guys. This episode, I pretty much want to just cover the second half of all the moves that were made in the offseason. Last podcast episode, I pretty much covered, I think, 14 or 15 guys pretty much in depth, leaving off, I believe, with Max Fried and Garrett Crochet, Blake Snell, guys like that, that were previously covered. But today I have about 16 names. I have a lot of advanced stats, not too advanced, but kind of just a little bit of an overview so you can get a picture of what their 24 seasons looked like and what we can pretty much project into 2025. There were a lot of really confusing moves. The Slade Ciccone move the Diamondbacks made, we'll get into that later, but some of the moves were a little confusing, at least to me. But the first one that I want to talk about is Mr. Sugano going to the Orioles, 1 year, $13 million deal. I don't know too much of his advanced metrics. I know he's not like a flamethrower. I know that he's pitched in the WBC before. I believe he actually pitched when USA won the entire thing. I think there was a clip I saw of him pitching to Adam Jones on Twitter. But he is 35. Like I said, he's not really a flamethrower. He posted a 1.67 ERA. But he had 111 strikeouts over 156 and two-thirds innings. I like this move for the Orioles. I don't know exactly how it's going to translate to MLB. I'm not really going to give a projection on that because, frankly, I don't know too much about him to give an opinion on him like that. But the Orioles desperately need an arm in the rotation. We'll get into the Corbin Burnes move later. But they lost Corbin Burnes, and a lot of their guys in the rotation do get hurt a lot. Maybe John Means can come back. Grayson Rodriguez has been, you know, dealt with some injuries. Bradish had that arm injury. I believe he was either, you know, Tommy John or UCL injury. So it's good that they got an arm, but I don't know exactly how he's going to project in the majors. But like I said, 35, very impressive ERA. Not a big strikeout guy, but he doesn't walk a lot of guys either. I think he had between like 11 and 17 walks over those 156 innings. So you're getting a guy with good control. A veteran and knows obviously how to throw the baseball pretty well. The first big move I want to cover, Cody Bellinger goes to the New York Yankees. This is a move that for years, I mean, even when Cody Bellinger was with Dodgers, was with obviously the Cubs, everyone was like, you know what, Cody Bellinger would be such a good fit for the short porch in right field for the Yankees. He could play pretty much every position on the diamond. He could play left, he could play center. He could play right field. He's very good at first base. His OAA this year was zero, so it would put him around the 60 to 62nd percentile, which is, you know, a little bit above average. But in terms of his defensive dependability, his versatility, you're getting one of a premier player in that term. Bellinger, a lot of his advanced metrics were down. He did club 18 home runs. Slash line of 266, 325, 426, 751 OPS. But the main thing that I saw with Bellinger, didn't really strike out that much, and he squared the ball up really, really well. Just the lineup protection in general, You're going to have, obviously, Aaron Judge, Jazz Chisholm, guys like that. But his projected numbers for Yankee Stadium should be a lot better. And a lot of us know from watching baseball, Cody Bellinger is very, very streaky. He'll have a really good year, and then he'll have a really bad year. Last year, in my opinion, was definitely a down year, especially if you're looking at average exit velocity, barrel percentage, hard hit percentage, stuff that you guys know that I take into account when analyzing my players on X and especially recording these podcasts. Definitely a down year in that term. But like I said, he's going to Yankee Stadium. It's a bandbox, and his profile should display very, very well. Another lefty that I want to talk about, Max Kepler, 1 year, $10 million deal with the Phillies. Definitely a down year, but I'm not really going to take into account an outlier 2024. I know he kind of battled some injuries over the past few seasons, but I want to look at his 2023. He was at least 80th percentile in ex-WOBA, expected batting average, expected slugging, average EV, barrel percentage, hard hit percentage. He didn't chase, and he didn't whiff, and this K-clip is kind of high, but you're looking at 21% with a 10% walk rate. I mean, close to 10% walk rate is above league average, and 21% K rate is right around MLB average, and he plays a great outfield too. His spray chart overlaid with Citizens Bank is disgusting. There are at least, I think it was 5 or 6 doubles that I saw that would have been home runs there. He's going to have Bryce Harper in there. He's going to have Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber. He's going to get a crap ton of lineup protection. This move for the Phillies is unbelievable. I really wanted the Rays to get him, but really good move for the Phillies. Not really a high risk. $10 million, especially in this market, honestly, is pretty cheap, especially with some of the deals that, you know, some of these position players are getting, especially some of these pitchers. We've seen some of the largest contracts in MLB history in terms of left-handed pitchers and just starting pitchers in general. Like I said, we'll get into that Corbin Burns move later in this episode. But yeah, Max Kepler of the Phillies, really, really like this move. Patrick Sandoval, 2 year, $18 million deal with the Boston Red Sox. I do believe he'll come back in the second half, but the Red Sox, obviously, get Garrett Crochet. They have Sandoval. They have Houck. They have Brian Bayo. They have Carter Crawford. And their bullpen, they got a lot of upgrades. I know they got Chapman and a few other guys that I really like. Austin Slayton's really good as well. I don't know exactly what they'll do with Sandoval. Like I discussed last episode and just what the Red Sox are doing in general, they are very, very anti-fastball. So probably expect Sandoval to decrease his fastball usage a lot, but you bolster the rotation. I think the Red Sox are going to be disgustingly good this year. Roman Anthony, you got Campbell, you got some of the, you know, brightest prospects in all of Major League Baseball. Marcelo Meyer. So you're getting a guy, if the Red Sox do really good in the first half, Patrick Sandoval could come back in the second half, provide some good innings, and maybe do something in the playoffs. So I like this move for the Red Sox. Just adds more depth to the rotation, and it allows, you know, guys like Houck to potentially I know he had a bad second half compared to his first half. He was lights out. Same thing with Carter Crawford. But you add some more depth to that rotation in the second half. I think that's a really good move for the Boston Red Sox. The next move I want to talk about, this is going to be absolutely disgusting. Actually, kind of like a combo move. Astros get Christian Walker, and they also get Isak Paredes. Isak Paredes, without a doubt, if he plays remotely any sort of games next year, should hit 30 home runs. His pull profile is disgusting. On Twitter, pretty much every time he hit a home run, every single one of his home runs is pulled. He has the most pulled in a row home runs in StatCast history. So you have Isak Paredes going to the Astros. Then you have Christian Walker going to the Astros. At least 80th percentile in ex-WOBA, expected slugging, average EV, barrel percentage, hard hit percentage. He has elite bat speed, 75 miles an hour, 90th percentile. He does whiff. He does K. The K rate isn't like alarmingly bad. It's 24.1%. If it was in like that 26 to 28 range, it's a little concerning. But he walks at a above average clip, 10%. He is one of the premier defenders at first base, 13 OAA. Christian Walker, same thing with Isak Paredes, 30 home runs. I mean, the Astros infield is Christian Walker, Jose Altuve, Jeremy Pena, Isak Paredes. I challenge pretty much anyone listening to this to comment down below or comment on X or reply to when I post this video out on my Twitter page that has a better infield than that. Isak Paredes, 30-plus home runs. Jeremy Pena isn't I wouldn't say an elite ball player by any means. He's definitely good, but he's like a pretty average shortstop. You're going to get good defense. You're going to get kind of some pop, like 15, maybe 20 home runs potentially, but around like that, you know, low range, like 15 to 17 average defense. Jose Altuve, arguably the best second baseman that we've seen in this generation. The dude is unbelievable. And then you add Christian Walker, who's going to hit 30 home runs, premier defense. And it's definitely an upgrade over what they had last year with John Singleton and the awful stretch that Jose Abreu had. So two really good moves for the Astros. So what do the Cubs get from the Isak Paredes trade? They get Kyle Tucker, arguably a top, I would say, when he's playing, top 10 player in baseball. He's gonna draw walks, elite pop, great defense, clutch in the postseason, has World Series experience. He's gonna bolster that roster with Dansby Swanson, PCA, a breakout from Michael Bush from last year. One of the best moves of the entire offseason for the Cubs, but it's if they extend Kyle Tucker. They get rid of Isak Paredes and Hayden Wesinski. I think, honestly, the Astros can turn Hayden Wesinski into an absolute beast. Some of his stuff, if you just look at him pitch, is absolutely disgusting. I don't have his metrics on hand or memorized off the top of my head. I apologize about that. I don't really think anyone would have Hayden Wesinski's numbers right off the top of their head. But I think they could definitely play around with his off-speed stuff. But if the Cubs don't extend Kyle Tucker, I think it's just an absolute waste move. Basically, you get like a one-year window with Kyle Tucker, but you kind of have to go all in. You're getting not every franchise just get, you know, hey, we're not used to really having, I guess, a top guy since maybe Chris Bryant when he was in his prime, and Anthony Rizzo and Javier Baez too. Yeah, we're going to go and get Kyle Tucker, a top 10 player in baseball. Excuse me. They need to extend Kyle Tucker after this season. One of the moves that really, really confused me. The Reds get Jose Trevino, and the Yankees get back Fernando Cruz and Alex Jackson. I'm sure most of you guys listening know about Fernando Cruz. If you don't, the dude has one of the nastiest splitters in baseball. It's insane. I'm pretty sure it has like an over 50% whiff percentage. I think everything else gets hammered, but if they can just tweak his splitter usage and maybe play around with his fastball location, he could be an elite reliever. His splitter is disgusting. One of the highest whiff rates among all pitches in Major League Baseball last year. Alex Jackson, for any of the Rays fans that are listening, was pretty dreadful behind the plate. And if you actually look at his second half numbers with the Rays, they were pretty good before they DFA'd him. Great pitch framer, great pop time, one of the best arms in Major League Baseball. And if you look at his minor league numbers against lefties, he crushes them. So potentially, the Yankees get a potential Jose Trevino replacement. Not saying, obviously, he's going to be their starting catcher, but they get a Jose Trevino replacement that is a good pitch framer, has a good arm, and mashes lefties in the minors. And we saw a little bit of that at the major league level at times. He had an absolute bomb against Corbin Burns for his first home run of the year. And then you get Fernando Cruz, who the Yankees at developing bullpen arms have been elite, arguably the best, along with like the Rays and the Guardians at developing bullpen arms, with Fernando Cruz, who has arguably one of the nastiest pitches in baseball. I didn't really understand this move. To be completely honest, I think the Yankees absolutely fleeced the Reds in this deal. But Jose Trevino doesn't have the best arm. He's a great pitch framer, great game caller. He was really pivotal in the Yankees' kind of success in 23. He was pretty good in 22. I believe he was an all-star. But Fernando Cruz to the Yankees and Alex Jackson to the Yankees. And yeah, I just a really, really weird move for the Reds. I like this a lot, actually, for the Yankees. The Yankees also get Paul Goldschmidt. 1 year, $12.5 million deal. And I've seen a lot of people on Twitter talk about how, you know, he's declining. You know, his metrics are declining. His peripherals don't look good. He hasn't really shown that much pop. And, I mean, you're looking at a guy that won an MVP. I mean, now we're in 2025, 3 years ago. It's not like he's won an MVP four or five or six years ago. I mean, he's 2 years removed from MVP-level production. And looking at his advanced metrics, too, his 49.6% hard hit percentage was in the 92nd percentile. So Paul Goldschmidt still hits the ball hard. He had an absolutely fantastic second half. I believe his WRC plus was over 120. 10.7% barrel percentage. Average exit velo of 91.2 miles an hour. Still 82nd percentile. His OAA wasn't the best this year at 49th percentile. So pretty much about league average. But you're getting him in a bam box. I believe that he'll provide, obviously, great value at first base. Platoon him with Ben Rice. Maybe put Ben Rice under his wing. But this move for the Yankees, I think, is absolutely fantastic. You're getting a veteran presence, obviously. Great with the D-backs. He's had, you know, he has postseason experience with them. Postseason experience with the Cardinals, while it was limited. Won an MVP. One of the premier defenders in baseball. Not recently, but potentially. Is one of the best defenders in baseball if he can get to that level. Still barrels the ball, still hits the ball hard, still has pretty good expected numbers. This is a really good move for the Yankees. Yankees offseason was, I mean, really, really good. They didn't get Juan Soto, but they did an absolutely great job pivoting. You get Max Fried, you get Cody Bellinger, who we already talked about. You potentially get one of the nastiest stuff relievers in Fernando Cruz with that unbelievable splitter, and obviously who we just talked about, you get Paul Goldschmidt, upgrade at first base, and Alex Bregman is still available. Alex Bregman hasn't signed a deal yet, so potentially you see maybe Bregman go to New York. I know I'm not going to speculate. Maybe he goes to New York. Maybe Nolan Arenado goes to New York, but that could definitely be an area of upgrade for the Yankees. I mean, also they're going to have a full season of Jason Dominguez. I think Jason Dominguez can be an absolute beast. So pivoting off of kind of that recap, Isak Paredes, Kyle Tucker, Christian Walker. From Christian Walker, the D-backs obviously lose out at first base. So they're going to get Josh Naylor in a swap with Slade Ciccone. If you just look at it at face value, it's not good for if you get Slade Ciccone, it's not the best move for the Guardians, but his extension is unbelievable. And being a Rays fan, we were linked to Slade Ciccone I believe last year and towards the end of 23. So you're getting a guy that has been targeted by arguably the best pitching development in Major League Baseball in the Rays. And the Guardians want him, arguably one of the best. Slade Ciccone could turn into an absolute beast. Good extension, pretty good stuff. And actually, Sam Horvath posted an article on him. He's one of the writers for Skipper's View. Please give it a read. It is very, very in-depth. But the D-backs do replace Christian Walker with Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor, pretty good season. 31 home runs. I know he kind of had a little bit of a drop-off in the second half. 243, 320. 456, 776 OPS. If you look at advanced metrics, a league average in barrel percentage, league average in hard hit percentage, his expected numbers are pretty good. Ex-WOBA, 72nd percentile at 335. Expected batting average, 257, 66th percentile. Expected slugging in the 71st percentile. But one thing that definitely stands out for Naylor is he doesn't really whiff too much. It's above league average in that aspect. He doesn't really K either. You would expect a guy that's hitting 30 plus home runs, he had 31 last year. But 30 plus home runs doesn't really K that much at 16.6% in the 80th percentile. Walks, he probably could increase his walk percentage next year. And I believe his spray chart what the D-backs is probably better than it is with the Guardians. But not the greatest defender, probably league average OAA. Doesn't have the best arm strength, obviously. First base, not going to have elite sprint speed compared to a guy like, you know, probably the same as Christian Walker. But you're getting a guy that doesn't really whiff, doesn't really strike out, walks at a decent clip, 30 home runs, 100-plus RBIs, absolute demon in terms of his overall energy. I know we all saw the clip of him hitting a grand slam off of Liam Hendricks and then doing it again in extras. Great clubhouse guy, wants to win, and you're looking at really good expected stats, good overall production in general, and I think this is a pretty good replacement, I guess, for Christian Walker. But it was confusing. So the D-backs obviously remove Christian Walker. Everyone's freaking about, oh my God, who are the D-backs going to get at first base? They get their replacement. Then everyone's wondering who Cleveland is going to get as a replacement because they just lost a first baseman. The first base market was going ridiculous. So to pivot off that, Cleveland gets Carlos Santana on a one-year $12 million deal. The dude is, I'm pretty sure, either 40 or approaching 40, and I don't know how he does it. He is still good. Okay. One thing that stands out with Carlos Santana is he absolutely is elite defensively. Without looking, I'm pretty sure some of you guys didn't expect Carlos Santana to have a 14 OAA in his 39-year-old season, 97th percentile, and pretty much since Santana's been in the league, he's obviously a true vet, caught with the Guardians. This is actually his third stint with the Guardians. He doesn't strike out, and he does walk. 16.7% K rate is in the 79th percentile, and his 10.9% walk percentage is in the 82nd percentile. So doesn't K, walks a lot, doesn't chase, squares up the ball pretty good. His expected stats are iffy, but you still add a veteran to that Guardians team who made a really good run actually last year in the playoffs. So you're adding a guy that's already been with the organization, obviously is very valued by the organization. He knows it very well, his third stint. So you add that into a lineup with obviously Jose Ramirez, Stephen Kwan, Lane Thomas, guys like that, potentially maybe Bo Naylor if he can actually produce some good numbers. But yeah, a lot of really good pivots. Guardians found one. The Diamondbacks found one, and obviously the Astros found one. So within, I think it was like a two-day stretch, Christian Walker, Carlos Santana, and Josh Naylor all move teams, and everyone's freaking out about where are they going to get a replacement? Why did Slade Ciccone go over there? Why did, you know, whoever go over there? They all got replacements, and they're pretty good pivots. Some not upgrades, obviously. The Diamondbacks probably want Christian Walker still over a guy like, you know, Josh Naylor. But yeah. Going into the next move, Robert Garcia goes to the Rangers in exchange for Nathaniel Lowe. This move is really, really good, I think, for both parties. Don't have all my Robert Garcia data with me, but Robert Garcia was one of the best relievers last year in baseball and has some of the best stuff in, obviously, Major League Baseball. But Nathaniel Lowe, 16 home runs, 265 average, 361 on base, 401 slugging, 762 OPS. The weird thing, if you look at Nathaniel Lowe's trends, every year that he is good offensively in the power department, he's horrible defensively at first base. Every year where he's great defensively at first base, he doesn't have power metrics. I think he had years where he had 20-plus home runs and his OAA was low. This year, 7 OAA, decline in the power metrics, 16 home runs. He walked an insane amount last year, 12.6%, 97th percentile. His K rate is right around league average at 22%. You'd like to maybe see that improved, even like a, you know, 20 or 18%. That would be very impressive. But he doesn't whiff. He doesn't chase. He has pretty above average bat speed. And his expected numbers were kind of all over the place. I mean, you're going to the Nationals. James Wood, I actually just published an article on him and made a thread. James Wood is going to go off. You have Dylan Cruz, CJ Abrams. The Nationals' future is ridiculously bright. I'm pretty sure they actually secured the first overall draft pick in the draft this year. So a really good move for both parties. Rangers potentially get a bolstered bullpen when you get a guy like Garcia, and the Nationals upgrade at first base, which I think is really, really good. Shamanai returns to the Mets on a 3-year, $75 million deal. Absolutely loved Shamanai. Going into last year, I made a few YouTube videos on how I thought his expected numbers would translate, especially with him implementing the sweeper and dropping his arm angle, which he actually did last year. Love this for the Mets. I don't really think anyone expected him to go anywhere else but the Mets, but you're getting Shamanai, $25 million a year. Not bad at all. This move was so saddening to me because I wanted the Rays to get Jock Peterson so bad. He goes to the Rangers, and what does Jock Peterson do? He absolutely crushes righties. Just in general, slash line last year, 275, 393 on base, 515 slugging percentage. So, Jock Peterson, kind of like Nathaniel Lowe, walked an elite amount. 12.2%, 94th percentile, has very good bat speed, and his expected numbers are ridiculous. 80th plus percentile in ex-WOBA, expected batting average, expected slugging, average exit velocity, barrel percentage, and hard hit percentage. Pretty much you're getting like a Nathaniel Lowe replacement, and probably better, not in terms of the position value, but in terms of just the power production. Walks, their walk rate is pretty much identical. Nathaniel Lowe, 12.6%. Jock Peterson, 12.2%. Pretty much identical in that terms. Obviously, Jock is going to chase and whiff more because he does have more power potential. Very similar bat speeds as well, now looking at all the data. But in terms of just the peripherals, Jock Peterson is obviously going to get him in terms of just barreling up the baseball. One of the most elite guys in terms of just barreling up the baseball. Great clubhouse guy. You're adding him, you know, to a team with, you know, they're getting Jacob DeGrom back. Kumar Rocker could have a breakout year. Wyatt Langford is going to be phenomenal. Maybe we could see Evan Carter return to form. But you're adding Jock Peterson in a group that has already won a World Series in 2023. Obviously, they weren't the best last year. But you add kind of a lefty replacement power hitter in Jock Peterson. Absolutely love this move for the Texas Rangers. Walker Buehler goes to the Red Sox, 1 year, $21 million. I think Walker Buehler was linked to the Red Sox more than pretty much every other team. Some people were saying the Yankees, but I think everyone knew it was going to be the Red Sox. So obviously they bolster the rotation. Walker Buehler, Brian Bello, and that rotation is pretty much bolstered now after that move. Eloy Jimenez, minor league deal with the Rays. I kind of covered it on X. His peripherals have went down, but he still barrels the baseball at an elite rate. I think in the BAM box next year in George Steinbrenner Field, I think he could go absolutely off. There's pretty much no risk in this move for the Rays, and they potentially found an impact bat at DH or if they want to play him at an outfield position. Teoscar Hernandez goes to the Dodgers, pretty much returns back to the Dodgers, 3 years, $66 million. Honestly, where else was Teoscar Hernandez going to go? A lot of people were saying return back to the Blue Jays. Blue Jays really missed out on a lot of guys, and I really feel bad for Blue Jays fans. They offered Burns the most amount of money, which we'll get into in a little bit. Offered Burns, I think, the most amount of money. Obviously, we're linked to Shohei. We're linked to Juan Soto. They were linked to all these big-name guys, and they haven't landed one except for Andrés Giménez. So I really feel bad for Blue Jays fans. Anyways, Teoscar Hernandez, you know what you're getting. 30-plus home runs, an 800-plus OPS last year. Expected numbers, really good. 346 ex-WOBA, 83rd percentile. Expected slugging, 91st percentile. Average exit velocity at over 90 miles an hour. Elite barrel percentage rate at 14.9%, and he hits the ball extremely hard as well. Hard hit percentage at 46.8%. In terms of his plate recognition and swing and miss, it's going to be really low. He's going to whiff a lot. He's going to K a lot. He chases. He walks at around a league average clip at around 8%. Not going to be obviously good in terms of his OAA. But one thing that I actually didn't really realize about Teoscar Hernandez is he was 83rd percentile, in sprint speed last year. That was definitely a shocking factor in looking at his profile and posting a little bit about him on X. Was I didn't really expect Teo to still have, you know, pretty above average or borderline, just really good speed. Dodgers, still just unbelievable team. They get Blake Snell. Tommy Edman obviously returns. And you get Teoscar Hernandez back in that lineup that just won a world championship. Obviously, they lose out on Walker Buehler, but Roky Sasaki is still a free agent. Potentially, he goes there. I know he's looking for smaller market teams, but they're probably still in the mix for him. Dodgers get even better. Teoscar Hernandez goes back to them. And the last move that I want to talk about, Corbin Burnes signs a six-year, $200-plus million deal with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And there's so many people that think that Burnes is going to regress, which he definitely has. I will say that pretty much the only thing that he improved on advanced metrically or just regular peripherals is his walk rate decrease, which is a good sign. Pretty much everything, all the expected stats, batting average against, his run value on his cutter, which is unbelievable pitch, average exit velocity, his K rates have gone down, I think, every year for the last 3 years. So yeah, those declined, but you're still looking at a guy with one of the best fastball run values, which includes his cutter, one of the best pitching run values, breaking ball run value, 88th percentile. All of his expected numbers are really good. Expected ERA is still 3.34, 75th plus percentile. Still throws the ball, obviously, very hard, 97 mile an hour fastball velocity. His average exit velo, chase rate, whiff rate are still going to be 80th plus percentile, all elite in that. Like I said, his K rate at 23.1% is league average. It's declined pretty much every year. I wonder if they just tweak some, you know, pitch usages, but I don't know. I don't know if Burnes increases his K rate. I mean, maybe potentially, but it's declined every single year. Doesn't walk guys. Like I said, decrease in walk rate, which is pretty much the only I guess upgrade he had over 2023 in his career, but it's been kind of a downward trajectory in terms of that. But in my opinion, Corbin Burnes is still an ace. Limits hard hits, has a really good ground ball rate at 48.8%. A lot of it is from that cutter and just jamming people. But this is one thing that I actually looked at. So this is my personal stat. Since 2020, Corbin Burnes is first in ERA at 2.88, first in WHIP at 1.02, first in hard hit percentage at 32.3%, first in Sierra at 3.31, first in K percentage at 29%, FIP at 3.01 was second, first in barrel rate at 5.5%, and second in average exit velocity at 86.7 miles an hour. You could think, and obviously no, because they have declined, of his advanced metrics and his overall statistics and his K rate, especially in just his expected stats. Corbin Burnes is still an ace. Your best ability as a Major League Baseball player, as an athlete in the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, Major League Soccer, your best ability as an athlete is to stay on the field. That is your best ability. I believe he's one of, I think, when I was doing that, six or eight pitchers to pitch at least 800 innings in that time frame. So would you rather pay a guy, you know, like Max Fried, for example? Max Fried, he got more money than Burnes, who hasn't stayed healthy as much. Well, he might have maybe better expected stuff, Fried, and they can use, you know, maybe his repertoire more. But the Yankees paid a guy like Max Fried more, who has more injury concerns than Corbin Burnes, who has pitched 800 innings in that, you know, since 2020. He's one of, I think, eight pitchers to do that. So you're paying a guy because he has the ability to eat innings. I think he had over 190 innings or 180 innings last year, and he's done that for the last 3 years. You're paying a guy because he's able to pitch big games for you. He had a big game in the playoffs. So I kind of disagree with the, you know, Corbin Burnes move as like a decline move, or it's going to be really bad. I mean, maybe he does decline. Who knows? Baseball is such a weird sport, and some of the advanced metrics have kind of pointed to that. But you pay a guy because he is still an ace. He gives you innings. He gives your chance a better team to win. And that Diamondbacks rotation with, you know, Gallen and Merrill Kelly and Brandon Pfaadt, that rotation's nasty. You add Corbin Burnes to that. They had the best, arguably, pretty much statistically, the best offense in baseball last year. I know you lose Jock Peterson, but you get Josh Naylor. But I really like this move for the Diamondbacks. So unexpected. I know the Orioles missed out on so many guys. I mean, really feel bad for that organization right now. They got permission to spend money, and they didn't spend money. You know, you get the guy from Japan as a starting pitcher, and you get Tyler O'Neill, but you lose out on Corbin Burns. The Orioles have to get an arm after that. And the Blue Jays offer them the most amount of money. They have to kind of change the Canadian tax system in terms of professional sports, because it pretty much deters everyone from signing there. Why would Corbin Burns go to Toronto if half of his money or 40% of his money is going to go to taxes immediately? Corbin Burns, great move for the Diamondbacks. And that is pretty much all the moves that I wanted to cover. I didn't want to make this super, super long, definitely longer than the individual breakdowns that I did on Danny Jansen and Joe Boyle, but kind of around the same length as the very first one that I did. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to cover all the moves up until then. Going forward, it'll be a lot easier for me to have a schedule, just because I am very, very committed to what I've been doing, especially the last several months on X, and just bringing content to you guys. If there are big moves, I'll probably just make individual podcasts for those moves. So if Bregman goes to a team or Arenado goes to a team, I will cover those individually and have shorter episodes. But pretty much everything up until now, I know I might have missed one or two guys, and I apologize, but I tried to get everyone covered. I got 16 this time, and I think I got around 15 to 16 last time. So 30 guys, pretty good in-depth, I would say, coverage of expected stats, kind of my thoughts on it, and maybe kind of projections that I could cover and how they help their respective teams. But yeah, going forward, individual guys, I will cover in individual episodes. But if you aren't following me on X at @OPS_baseball, I am extremely, extremely active on there. Subscribe to my Substack at OPS, or just runningfromtheops.com. The URL should work after today. If you want to just look up runningfromtheops.com, it should pop up with my Substack. You can read some of my articles at the Skipper's View. Please follow all of my contributors at Skipper's View. Shout out to all those guys over there. I really appreciate the opportunity. Subscribe to the Skipper's View Substack as well. And yeah, I really appreciate all the support on X. The support on the podcast has been really, really good. And the first article that I posted got overwhelming support. And I just kind of want to finish this on just more of a personal note. I really appreciate you guys supporting me over this last year, going into now a new year in 2025. It means the absolute world that I'm able to speak my mind, cover baseball, cover stats and analytics. I'm definitely still learning about a lot of this. I was a former player, so I know more about the mechanical side and adjustment side in terms of pitching mechanics and pitch recognition for hitters, and finding loads and timing and stuff like that, and arm slots for pitchers and hitting, finding timing mechanisms. But the overall analytics side, I'm still learning. Definitely not an expert at all. A lot of even the people that I contribute with at Skipper's View, their knowledge is absolutely unbelievable. Still learning the game as much as I can in the analytics side, and still providing coverage as best as I can. But I really appreciate you guys supporting me. And I will definitely catch you guys in the next podcast episode. Thank you for listening.